Welcome everyone, this is All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 232, recording this on 11th of October 2017. I am Steve Litchfield, and with me I have managed to track down the elusive Mr. Rafe Blanford.
Yes, hello everybody. Sorry I haven't been on for a few weeks. It's been a bit busy with one thing and another, but Steve has managed to drag me, not really kicking and screaming, quite pleased actually to be back on the podcast, because there's a few things we want to talk about, the usual kind of roundup of the news and stories, and I'm sure we'll have our usual side chat and glances into other topics.
Yes, but is there any point in carrying on, Rafe? Because apparently Windows Phone and Windows 10 Mobile are dead. So what, should we say goodbye and thank you for listening to this podcast? Good night.
Well, yes, that would seem a rather quick podcast. I guess for those that don't know, this was news that Joe Belfiore did a series of tweets kind of talking about, I think, restating what have already been said from Microsoft about the future Windows Phone. I suppose, depending on how you read them, there was a little bit extra that I would say maybe Microsoft was slightly more negative about hardware, and that saying there that it's no longer a focus. But I'm pretty sure that formulation of words has been used before. Yeah. And actually what happened is people jumped on this to say that Microsoft has abandoned Windows 10 Mobile. That's clearly not the case. Actually, you know, they said we'll continue to support it for enterprise, but it does appear likely that there's not going to be any new Windows 10 Mobile hardware from Microsoft. We kind of already guessed at that, because it was always going to be that the new Surface phone that got talked about, and I think it's talked about as Andromeda, kind of the program for that, would be kind of full on Windows, and it might not be a smartphone, it might be more a small tablet. And we've kind of speculated about that, but I think to be fair to some of the, you know, critics of Windows 10 Mobile, that kind of, there is a stronger sense there that there is now not going to be kind of first party smartphone hardware. And actually, you know, in the recent news, we've also seen HP say something very similar, basically because of lack of support from Microsoft. So it has solidified that. But at the same time, you know, there isn't really any change in how long it's going to be supported for. So 2019 is the date that sort of gets talked about. Steve can probably talk about that in more detail. But it was interesting that it did kick off another round of the Windows 10 Mobile is dead. And it was on the BBC News website, so on a couple of the papers as well. So it kind of got a further reach than it sometimes does. We've talked about this in the past. And yeah, I mean, I think, I would probably go so far as to say it is Microsoft starting to sunset efforts around Windows 10 Mobile, but there is clearly quite a long support period. We're still seeing UWP apps being released.
Yeah.
And so I just think you need to look at it, you know, you can look at this as glass half full or glass half empty. I don't think anyone's been saying for the last year or even 2 years that Microsoft is, you know, a big mover in consumer mobile in particular. What you could maybe argue here is that, you know, there is very little incentive now for enterprises to make any investments around Windows 10 Mobile. And I think Microsoft does have kind of that maybe has changed. And it's pretty telling when someone like Joe Belfiore says, yes, I'm now using an Android phone. Before it was, oh, I carry an Android phone as well as my kind of Windows device. So, I mean, Steve, you talked about this on the site as kind of being a storm in a teacup or a Twitter storm. I would maybe have said there's a little bit more than that, but it's not this big terminal thing that other people seem to have implied, because honestly, to me, that had already happened. Yeah. There was maybe some extra confirmation, and the language around it was a little stronger, and so this is a no hardware thing, but kind of we already knew that, didn't we? I mean, that was already out in the open.
Yeah.
And so there is this kind of, as is typical with these platforms, going to be this sunsetting period. And so I guess people would ask us, you know, why are we doing the podcast? Well, I mean, for quite a while now we've been talking about Windows and mobile in a much broader sense, and I suspect we'll increase that in the future. But also, there is still an active user base out there, and yes, it will absolutely sort of shrink going forwards. But we're still seeing, you know, bits of activity around it, people releasing the phone. So for us, it's still something to talk about. And frankly, I think we do this because we enjoy talking about mobile. And, you know, yes, it's got a big Windows accent, but I don't think either of us would pretend that it isn't anything other than in a kind of, you know, do we want to call it a slow decline or a fast decline? You know, that's how, choose how you wordsmith it. Yeah, I mean, it's dead, but dead in the sense that, yeah, there's not new stuff coming or new hardware, but there's plenty of active users out there. And honestly, am I wrong to say it's no real change apart from maybe slightly stronger language around these statements? And yeah, it's been released on Twitter. I mean, if Microsoft was making some big formal announcement, that would be a press release.
Yeah, absolutely. I was rather appalled. The most shocking thing about all of this was not what Joe said, because we knew everything he said already, really. It was the fact that just three tweets from him could be amplified by using the incredible amplification method of the modern internet, and going across the tech sphere and onto the BBC's website, all from three tweets. Goodness me, only Donald Trump can tweet once and get such a response. But I'm not sure whether Joe was just being honest or whether he was deliberately trying to put something into the tech media via a side channel. It really is not clear, but There's really nothing new. I mean, Andrew Orlowski, a friend of mine over at the Register, he often, in the last couple of weeks, has been putting it, you know, how often can one platform die and yet carry on living? It's turning into the undead. It's turning into a zombie operating system in the sense that it carries on living. And that is kind of true. There's a good analogy by one of the commenters on this story, actually. And he talked about it in human terms, when someone perhaps retires. They've had a good working life. They retire age 65 or whatever. But then they're not dead, are they? They retire and then they live a good 20 or so years in a golden age, enjoying life, probably enjoying life an awful lot more actually when they were working. So just because someone has retired or reached the end of a selling period, as it were, does not mean that it ceases to become useful. The phones we have, the 930, 950, 830, goodness knows, got some classic Lumias, and now the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro. We've got a good range of devices. They're not going to stop working. And the main point of this article and my chart was to point out that we now have at least another 2 years in some cases. So not just support, as in you can contact Microsoft and they will return your emails. A full 2 years of cumulative updates, security patches, bug fixes, and even minor tweaks to the interface here and there. I appreciate we're not going to get major new features like we're seeing on the desktop and all the mixed reality and the fancy stuff. But just one data point, Ray, for some of the UWP apps I've been doing mini reviews on in the Flow section, they've been using this Windows Ink. I don't know whether you spotted, but the Windows 10 protractor and ruler tools. Now, I had thought this surely is just desktop only, but no, they're available as APIs in Windows 10 Mobile, showing just how much of the Windows 10 creators update code is common. So developers have now found these APIs and are starting to use rulers and protractors as control tools for their gestures and their pens and erasers or whatever in UWP apps that run on Windows 10 Mobile. So there are still, every time someone says Windows 10 Mobile is dead, it just makes me want to go straight to the side and start looking at my backlog of something like 40 or 50 UWP apps released in the last 2 months that I haven't even covered yet. I think, come on, there's new apps. I agree, it's not all doom and gloom. There is still life. There is still a spark of usefulness. And I reckon that spark of usefulness will carry on for another 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think people would probably accuse you of excessive optimism if you were saying there's 20 years of life after retirement, because there's a difference between humans and smartphones. And I think you'd be a bit more brutal and say those updates are definitely going to tail off more and more as we go forward.
Sure.
But you'll get the bug fixes. But I mean, I think it's one of those things that where, particularly in the tech media, you get so obsessed with the latest phone, and you know, be that the Pixel 2 or the iPhone X or the Samsung Note 8, that you forget that a lot of people will have a device and keep it for a couple of years. And I think, I mean, that's a little bit of a kind of get out of jail card when I talk about it like that, but that is the reality. It's probably fair to say, you know, there is this kind of zombie-like decline. But yeah, I mean, saying it's dead, I mean, frankly, that has happened, and Andrew is quite right when it's like, this has already happened, it's not really news. But I've said it before, it's really easy and it's really compelling to write a news story about something dying, particularly when it's from a big tech giant like Microsoft, because it goes hand in hand with the fact that Microsoft kind of missed mobile, which they absolutely did. But also, of course, it kind of misses the nuance that Microsoft are continuing to do other things, and actually they're kind of saying they're going to effectively improve Android and iOS. And I suspect that a lot of people who are listening to this who've got Android and iOS phone absolutely use Microsoft software on their phones, whether it's Outlook or one of the Office applications, or indeed some of the things that kind of Microsoft has released as extras. You know, Edge has actually been coming out in beta recently. That was kind of interesting. And it's sort of just a reflection of reality.
Yeah.
But as I say, yes, an easy story to write. I mean, for us, yeah, you hinted there, there's plenty of UWP apps to talk about and to be reviewed. If we look further forward, things are going to clearly change, and we'll talk about that maybe in a future podcast. But actually, there's going to be plenty for us to talk about in mobile in general, actually, as we have been doing already. But we're also going to be continuing to sort of talk a little bit about what's interesting in the Windows world, you know, while there are things to talk about. And simple as that, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, it really annoys me, really, in the tech world. Well, when people reduce everything to a winner and a loser, or a binary situation, it's not a question of iPhones won, Androids won, Windows Phone has lost, it's dead. We all know that Android is the dominant mobile platform, and the iPhone has a sizable premium niche. That's common knowledge. And we know that Microsoft has made a number of huge blunders, and we wouldn't, well, not blind to that, which is why it's ended up with stopping selling first-party hardware in a very small partner community. That's all water under the bridge. We accept that. But at the same time, there is this community that is alive, that I really enjoy using some of these older phones, that Lumia 930 I talked about in the article this morning on the site. But dropping back from the release preview ring to the production status on Creators Update means that many of our readers who got a Lumia 930 or a Lumia Icon back at the end of 2013, we're now at the end of 2017, and they're getting basically the start of a whole new two-year cycle, or maybe an 18-month cycle from this spring, of guaranteed support updates and fixes, which will take them into spring 2019, at which point some of our readers with Lumia 930s or Lumia Icons will have had their device fully supported and updated and patched for almost 6 years. Now, 6 years is an absolute eternity in today's smartphone world, so I really don't think, despite the other mistakes Microsoft may have made, you can't really accuse them of skimping really on the support front. And the fact that the way they've moved Windows 10 as a platform across all the different form factors, including mobile, means that people with all these classic Lumias that we've written about over the last 3 or 4 years can carry on riding that wave, at least for a while longer.
Agreed. And, you know, I think that point is important, that it's not, and we're not suggesting it's kind of mainstream. And I mean, be honest, I don't use a Windows 10 mobile device as my daily driver anymore. I've still got the 950XL, which I talk about very fondly. And actually, in some ways, the 930 is a device I prefer. I haven't actually updated it recently. But, you know, I still keep on reading the site. I still install some of the UWP apps onto my phone, you know, using in conjunction with the Surface tablet that I have. And, you know, it's fair to say that it isn't kind of part of the mainstream discourse in one sense, but I mean, I'm reluctant even to call it a hobbyist, because that's rather a negative way of talking about people who are continuing to use their phones and getting enjoyment from it. But of course, tech in general, and I think smartphones and mobile in particular, move so fast. There's a focus on what's interesting. And yes, for most people, I think it's fair to say that Windows 10 mobile would be pretty unusable switching back from something like Android or iOS because of the apps and services they use or what they're familiar with. But, you know, for people who, and I perfectly accept that view, and, you know, it's probably fair to say 99% of people, but equally well, those 99% of people should realize there are going to be a number of people who are quite happy to continue to use their Windows 10 mobile device. I mean, still, ironically, see actually quite a lot of Windows 8 devices out there because people like the simplicity of them. And one person described it to me, oh, it's just easier to use than the iPhone and Android. And I got a new Samsung, but I switched back to this Windows phone just because it was easier. And, you know, the kind of nostalgia and reminiscence around the Nokia 3110, which has just had the 3G edition, I think actually also speaks to that sort of thing. And it's just so easy for us to be focused just on the new thing. I mean, I do think we need to be realistic and realize that actually it's increasingly small numbers. And, you know, actually maybe we should spend less time not even being defensive or talking about, oh, it's still X immediately and left, and just say, yeah, this is an interesting app. You can use this going forward. It's hard to say, you know, because actually for certainly the rest of this year, I don't think there's any big change. You know, beyond that, we might well say, oh, well, we want to talk more about imaging in general, because that's one of the topics we're very fond of. And actually, maybe the sort of that balance between, you know, what does come next for the smartphone, that's something we've also touched on a lot. And that kind of more of a general kind of chat around mobile, maybe we'll do that. But in the meantime, actually, Steve alluded to it, he's got 40 UWP apps, and there's more being released every week. I mean, I will say I'm going to be sad not to see new hardware, but honestly, I probably should have been a little bit more, yeah, that's kind of, that ship has already sailed. So probably a long topic to talk about, and I'm sure we'll come back to it. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoy listening to Steve and I continue to talk about this stuff, and probably what will happen is we'll talk about mobile in an increasingly broad way.
Yes, it's a delicate balance, really. On the one hand, I want to be absolutely realistic, and with my other hats on, I do the phone show and I write for Android Beat. I even write for iPhone Hacks. I did a review of the recent iPhone 8 Plus, and I'll be reviewing the iPhone X/10 in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. So I'm fully aware of what else is out there, but at the same time, the Lumia series, and especially the 930, 950, 950 XL, they have unique selling points. I guess unique unavailable points, as I put them recently, because you can't actually buy them anymore. But they are unique. And when I pick up my 930 or 950 or 950 XL, I genuinely enjoy the experience. I enjoy the applications that do exist. And things like Groove Music, I know it lost its streaming component recently from Microsoft, but you can still stream your music from OneDrive. And of course, I'm old school, so I actually own all my music, so it still works really, really well. Grover Pro is a brilliant podcasting tool. Apps like OneDrive and Outlook, even Edge, I enjoy on that large 950 XL screen. I enjoy the fact that it's got the best camera out there from my perspective at the moment. Certainly, I would argue it's right up with the very best generally. So whenever I want to take a photo of something or do anything to do with media, even watching Netflix sometimes or watching YouTube, I pick up my Lumia because I just love the screen. I love the contrast. Mm. I love the feel in the hand. I've got a Mozo leather back, etc., etc., etc. So we're not being blind. It's a delicate balance. I want to be completely honest and objective, but I also want to be enthusiastic about things I'm genuinely enthusiastic about.
Yeah, and I would say there's nothing wrong with liking a zombie, but actually that what you're saying about some things just work better on the Lumia device, or the characteristics that I really like. And actually I think that's one of the things, I guess, because there haven't been updates, you kind of appreciate those older devices more, whereas of course, yeah, if you're talking about an Android device, you're not really interested in a device that's a couple of years old, because there's clearly something better out there. But I also think it speaks to the Lumias being relatively ahead of their time in a lot of ways, or some very smart decisions made around what was put into the products, whereas elsewhere it was kind of, it's always been the focus on getting kind of the spec right or the latest shiny thing. I mean, actually, I think, to be fair, Apple have done a pretty good job on not being obsessed by specs and actually making it more about the features. But, you know, that's it's a very different approach in general. And actually, you talked about some of the apps there. Yeah, you know, it was and remains, you know, a very usable thing. And actually, it's very interesting the way I look at the Android and the iPhone devices. Yeah, I still have stuff going up to OneDrive. I'm still using the Office apps. I'm still using Outlook. And I still find myself wishing, I wish I could have feature X or feature Y. Actually, one of the big ones is still Live Tiles, because honestly, it's quite hard to look at one of the Android or iOS devices and kind of get information at a glance off it, even to the extent of, you know, getting what you want out of the lock screen. It just feels like there's extra swipes and extra interactions to get there. Once you get into the applications, you know, and you actually talked about this in a recent story of kind of that when the app gap does and doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Honestly, for me, I think it always has been the biggest problem that Windows Mobile and Windows Phone before it has. And, it continues to be a problem. You've always been a little bit more web-based or willing to accept that. And that, you know, this is exactly what you're essentially getting at in the article. That, you know, it depends on your perspective. And I think you're probably on one end of that app gap spectrum, and probably somewhere in the middle. But I think maybe I go so far as to say the majority of people, because they've become so trained and it's what you're familiar with, it's kind of Pareto principle, I guess, that kind of familiarity, everyone's been trained to think about that as a big problem. When, of course, actually, the issue is as much around some of the very core apps that have been missing and haven't been at the same level of quality, have had a bigger impact on me personally, rather than kind of a long, long list that I go, oh, I really wish I had that. And that's all contributed to, I think, the narrative around Windows 10 Mobile and Microsoft efforts. And they absolutely did try everything. You know, they, as Joe Belfiore expressed it, you know, they offered to build the apps for developers. They were paying developers to do it. And it's been a perennial problem for them, and it really hasn't gone away. And I mean, it still exists. And but as you said, you know, you can do a lot of it in the Edge browser because that's something that you're willing to do.
Yeah.
But do you think because other people have become so accustomed to that kind of app ecosystem elsewhere, they're almost blind to the sort of thought that they could do it another way?
It's very interesting. We've covered this on previous podcasts to a degree. There's quite a few people out there who think that even apps are going to go away. And I just to raise that point, because the Monument browser, which I've been championing on as a UWP alternative browser for Windows 10 Mobile, it had an update this evening. And if you pin websites, your banking sites, courier sites, all the sort of typical things you can't get with an app on Windows 10 Mobile, if you pin any of those sites to your start screen and from Monument browser, when you launch into them from that start screen, it launches the website with no URL bar, no browser furniture, complete full screen as if it was an app. So for the many sites out there which are HTML5 and essentially are what most applications on most sites actually produce, they kind of web wrapped in an app code, you're getting almost an identical experience using the Edge rendering engine within the Monument browser, launch from the start screen, yada yada. But the experience, you tap on a tile which says, for example, Amazon or my bank or my courier or my taxi firm, and you're taken full screened that services or site's HTML5 version running on your nice large Windows 10 mobile smartphone screen. And I think that could be the way things go. I'm not entirely sure that apps are here to say. I think there is a definite move to everything being basically web-based, HTML5, and that is the lowest common denominator, but it's also a damn good common denominator.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's definitely the lowest common denominator. I think you do get a consistency issue, and you can't take advantage of some of the engagement features that you get with the full platform. And I think if you've been on Windows 10 Mobile, there's maybe not a full appreciation for what Android and iOS offer to that extent. But you're not wrong to say it kind of offers that functionality. It's just maybe the design interaction. And I think that is a very particular class of apps around kind of service-orientated ones, particularly ones that you're not necessarily using every day. And it does strike me that things like the e-commerce sites and even to a certain extent things like utilities or banks, I mean, banks are an interesting one because some people are using those multiple times a day, but any app that you would maybe use once a month, I mean, certainly makes sense as a website, and, you know, progressive web apps have come a long way, and it's clear that to me that that has a very consistent future. I think what people would identify elsewhere is some of the things that are you're using every day, and it's the Facebooks, it's the Snapchat, it's the Instagram, and the fact that they had, even when they had an app at best, it was kind of second level quality, and there were plenty of those that didn't exist. And, you know, take your pick of whichever on-demand service you want, you know, Deliveroo, everything else, they tend to be a slightly poorer experience when there is a web option available. And in a lot of cases they don't have a web option, they're kind of app only. And then you get into kind of the more disposable kind of the game type stuff. And of course, they do exist as UWP apps in some cases, but not to the same quantity, not the same range. It depends what your perspective is, right? Because for you, it's not a major thing, but you'll be the first to say you can see why for other people it would be a massive deal. Yeah, I would say there's an app problem. It's an app gap that I really notice. It's what stops me carrying it around as a kind of a primary device. And it, honestly, it probably has been that way for a while now. But again, it's about understanding that other people see it in a different way. Do I see apps disappearing long term? Honest answer. No, I don't think they will, but I think the lines will blur between them. And, you know, Google's got the idea of streaming apps. Even Apple, to an extent, sort of will let you download part of an app and then download more of an app in place. And I think that kind of technology will come on more. There's progressive web apps. And also lots of stuff will move out of the app. And, you know, it'll be in your assistant. And people might curse Cortana, Google Assistant, Siri, whatever, as not being good enough. But you can see that changing in a few years. And things like smartwatches or AR glasses will change the game again. I mean, I still think there will be, for the really, especially bigger brands, there will still be a desire to get people into that app because it offers the best way to have core engagement and high frequency of use. But for some of the other apps, and I think, you know, the ones you talk about in the story, that you maybe are using less frequently, and you'll be that your energy provider or maybe a payment solution you use occasionally like PayPal, that becomes a lot more interesting. Because I think, yes, a lot of those, you know, having something that's browser based or largely browser based maybe makes a lot of sense. But equally well, you know, it's this really ridiculous idea that there's one solution for doing apps. There's clearly not. Yeah. It depends on the circumstances of the company, what audience they're going after, what they're trying to achieve. And I think it's been this rule forever. There's the, you know, the app versus web has been a perennial debate. And the goalposts are absolutely moving on all the time. And it's only going to get more complicated as we're kind of moving away from everything conversion to the smartphone to things distributed. So, you know, as a, you know, big company, do you do the website? Do you do the mobile app? Do you need to do something that works with a voice assistant? You know, do you need to think about AR? Do you think you need to think about other solutions? Do you need to have two different versions of your app? I mean, interesting to see Facebook Messenger have the light version come out in some of the Western markets. Actually, you know, when we're talking about digital now, it's like often we're talking about being able to reach 50, 75% of the customer base. Actually, the idea that you have a single product or a single way of doing that is probably not the right one. And so, you know, apps versus webs, actually my view on this, if I was asked now, it's kind of what my day job is yes, absolutely. In most cases, an app is something you should be looking at. Whether you're building that using web-based technology, something like React Native, for example, is an interesting one, but you do need a website as well. The balance on features between those gets even more interesting, but it's going to change radically in the next 5 years because you will have this idea of assistance, you will have AR coming in, you will have more use of voice and all of those things. And so actually, if there's any advice, it's prepare for a world where it's even more fragmented. But the good news is you'll have even more of your customers on it. They'll be interacting with you more, and there'll be more business opportunities and more marketing opportunities. And, you know, I may sound like a broken record saying that, but it's this idea that mobile as a singular thing was absolutely at the core of what the smartphone was when I started, and kind of that was what the first 10 years were about. But now, you know, give a plug to 361 podcast that I also recall. We talk about mobile and everything around it. And that's a very deliberate distinction, because I think absolutely in the next few years we're going to see an increasing amount orbiting around mobile or taking advantage of it. The really interesting one, does mobile remain mobile? I mean, the smartphone remain completely central to everything. Actually, I think we're going to have multiple things that you need to engage with. And I think, you know, that's the reality. So probably that's a massive detour from the topic at hand, Steve. Sorry about that.
Just a few data points. You mentioned Facebook there, which is a very good example, because the Facebook application, UWP application for Windows 10 generally is thought to be bloated and slow, and it is. And to be honest, if you bring up the Facebook website in Edge, it's really fast and usable.
Absolutely.
And ditto Twitter. The Twitter mobile website is, I would argue, is just as good as any application, especially if it's running completely full screen, as I just mentioned, via things like Monument Browser. Lloyds Bank, my bank of choice, the application on other platforms is basically the HTML5 website. There's a game, you think, well, games can't go down that way. One of my favourite games is the website Chess for Friends, I think it's called, and Chess Online is the application name. So I'm playing chain chess in real time against random opponents around the world. And, you know, I played it in the application on Windows 10, and I reviewed it on the site. Oh, this is very good. And then I was stuck somewhere else and didn't have the app, so I thought, well, I'll just go to the website. And the website is identical. The application for Android, and I presume for iOS and for Windows 10 Mobile, is basically the mobile website, just with a slight decrease in screen furniture. And I was amazed to find a game using that method as well. So I absolutely recognise, I'm completely with you, there is a quote app gap. My point in the article was it's not a binary thing again. There is an app gap for some people, there is less of an app gap for others. And in the future, who knows? Different people will find it's a problem in different ways.
Absolutely. And it's a really fascinating topic. I think it's one we'll probably come back to, because what we're seeing on Windows and the topics we debate about here will absolutely, I think, be relevant on the other platforms as well. And in some sense, it's somewhat disguised at the moment because there is such an app avalanche. But if you talk to companies, you will rapidly realize that some absolutely can justify the investment in apps. And actually, the problem they have is deciding how many apps they should have and how they should link together. Other companies will say, well, it's kind of difficult to justify. We want to do it via mobile web or a progressive web app. And actually, an awful lot of it depends on how frequently they expect to interact with their customers and what the kind of value they extract from that. Because, of course, most companies, it's there's a business case behind it. Actually, it's quite unusual, you know, to have the app-only approach. And we see that in a lot of the kind of startups. But because most companies are supporting legacy users or legacy systems, they kind of have this mixed approach. And I think that will be even more true going forward, because there will be, it's almost funny to refer to smartphone apps as being kind of the legacy version. But as you can do things through an assistant or AR, and actually I tend to think about them more generally as people always talk about machine learning and artificial intelligence, but actually just assistants in general. And that will affect apps as well, because increasingly, your app will be able to present you with a choice that it's kind of already made for you. You can get to a single tap. So, I mean, I might joke about it, but, open up the Amazon app and it will already have a good idea what you want to buy, and it will present you with a one-tap choice for that. That kind of personalization and that kind of data approach will become more prevalent. But equally, when you're going into an app, it will have much better idea about the context. We already see this in sort of travel apps, when understanding that you're in a certain location, more and more and more of that kind of doing things on your behalf. It's kind of interesting to see this trend is happening in hardware, because Apple is absolutely using that kind of things to make intelligent decisions about how it makes photos. That stuff actually originates with the Lumia team. They were some of the first to do that computational photography. But we're also seeing it from the likes of, the Google Pixel event. They actually had a camera that intelligently thinks about when to take a picture based on kind of motion and whether someone's in the face. And it's kind of those life-logging cameras. I'm sure we're going to see more of that kind of assistance and intelligence within devices and software. But that's not going to be just restricted to smartphone apps. That's going to kind of be everywhere. And the really interesting thing is how do you tie that together? How does that work? Because we've been so used to singular computing devices, and as much as you and I, Steve, have been proponents of, marrying up your smartphone with your other computing device, and, I think power users have wanted that for a long time, the reality is an awful lot of people have kept them as very separate devices, and actually, a lot of that success has been around kind of mobile only, and you think about Facebook or something like Spotify or other on-demand apps, that's certainly been true, but is that going to change? Yeah, so a really fascinating topic. And I think that's what we always tend to do in this AAWP podcast. We kind of go off topic, but actually that's one of the things I enjoy about this. That, maybe some of the constraints and challenges around Windows are making us think about the kind of problems more generally. Really good topic. And again, sorry for diverting you, Steve.
That's all right. And given how fast things are changing, you're going off into realms of fantasy in one sense, but in another sense, it's only really a year or two out. And again, absolutely. I mentioned that 5 or 6 year life for a Lumia 930 as, a positive eternity in the mobile world, but things really are changing very fast. I mean, Joe Balfour, as I mentioned before, said, For mobile, we have Windows 10 Mobile in the present tense. I noticed he didn't use the future tense. And as we've said, we're looking at maybe another year or two of Windows 10 Mobile specifically, but we don't know what's happening next year. I mean, this just going off at a complete tangent. I've been reviewing the Galaxy Note 8 recently, Rafe. I don't know whether you've had a chance to have hands-on with that.
I want to say it's a really lovely device, but actually it feels like it's more of the same in a lot of ways, although the improvements have been iterative. I mean, there's no doubting, it's a pretty impressive device, but you kind of hope so with the amount of money that it costs.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like Samsung have broken any particular new ground with it, yeah. But it is very noticeable that the innovations on that are appearing in things like the iPhone X as well. But actually what makes the Note interesting to me is that pen-based approach and the kind of deck system, where they really have thought, kind of continuum, like I guess from the Windows world,
yeah.
Is incredibly powerful. But it's been interesting reading a lot of the reviews. People talk about it as being great, but then not really practical to use, which kind of harks back to some of the conversations we've had about Continuum. But yeah, what's your take on it?
Well, leaving aside the fact that the Lumia 950 XL trounced it in the imaging test, but that's not to say that the Galaxy Note 8 camera is bad. It's very, very good. It's just I still think the 950 XL just pips everything in the world. But leaving all that on one side, I was really impressed by the Note 8. I was impressed by the size, the feel, the vision for having everything, from the Qi wireless charging to the headphone jack, to the good camera, to the stylus, to the longer aspect ratio, to the DeX possibilities, to USB Type-C. at every stage, it seems like this is the one device that got everything. And that got me thinking that several people have mentioned that maybe Microsoft will do more of adding its services and applications to Samsung devices, because they've done that in the past. Do you remember back in the day we had the Samsung Ative S, which was a Samsung branded Windows Phone 8 device? And we've recently, I think in the US Microsoft stores, we had this Samsung Galaxy S7, I'm tempted to say, with loaded up with Microsoft apps and services in the Microsoft stores. Just imagine in early 2018, if Microsoft were to offer a customized Galaxy Note 8 with all the Microsoft apps front and center, the Microsoft services, and Cortana, all of that stuff. There's think of that hardware and the Samsung name running Android, so with completely future-proof in that department, and so Microsoft doesn't have to worry about the phone's OS, but with all its apps and services. Now, part of this, part of me completely rails against the loss of the Windows 10 universal thing, you know, Windows 10 on phones, but just thinking practically, that is one way that Microsoft could go next year, sometime in 2018, and it would be, as Windows 10 Mobile winds down, it would be a way of getting hardware and their name, their services, their apps, their cloud stuff in front of people on some future-proof and really good hardware. So that might be a way they could go.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought. I mean, I think, you know, the more cynical would say, well, you can do that yourself, but there's no doubting kind of the power of bundling, and Microsoft absolutely could do something like that. I wonder whether that's sort of the old-fashioned version of the way the world works, whether Microsoft is interested in doing that. But yeah, that does offer quite a compelling consumer proposition. The fact it is, actually, in one sense, says something about the hardware, that could be one of the most interesting things. Because hardware, does it matter that much anymore? I mean, of course it does, because people are still attracted to the high-end devices. But in a lot of cases, we talk about iterative improvements and not kind of leaps and bounds stuff. And so actually, a lot more attention now goes on what you get in the latest version of the software. And Microsoft doing a kind of full-on Microsoft version of an Android device would certainly be an interesting expression of intent. I mean, I'm not sure it's going to go down that route, because I think the company is kind of moving away from that. But I wouldn't be at all surprised to see more efforts around partnerships with Android manufacturers to have some of its apps preloaded on the device. And we've kind of seen that with the Office apps. And certainly Microsoft could, you know, put more effort in that sort of space. Things like Cortana as well, that would be interesting, and sort of a lot of the underlying enabling tech, all the cloud services, that's, you know, what a lot of that's about. So yes, I hadn't really given it any thought, but it's an interesting topic. I mean, maybe that's something we should talk about in a future podcast. You know, what would be, you know, how does Microsoft improve Android and iOS, if you like? You know, what can it do there? How can it make it interesting? Because I think it plays into a much more general point about, you know, how do smartphones continue to stand out in a world where they aren't the be-all and end-all of the kind of new, latest, greatest technology. It's quite telling that the thing that excited people on the Note 8, you know, there wasn't really any standout piece of technology. And, you know, the standard iPhone this time around, everyone was like, yeah, whatever. And the iPhone X stood out because it had Face ID and kind of trying to move towards, you know, zero bezels. But in one sense, that was kind of what's gone before. That's what the last year has been about. Face ID, I think, does deserve a lot of credit. But actually, the really interesting stuff is what's inside, in terms of being optimized for AR, being optimized for machine learning. And that's largely a software thing. And so you do wonder, could Microsoft play in that space? Or, you know, how hard is that going to be, given that it doesn't control the platform and therefore, you know, can't be the first-party assistant, Cortana? But then you see it doing things as the experiments with releasing Edge for Android and iOS, and that's sort of in beta at the moment. But yeah, really interesting one to think about.
Yeah, but I think actually, just to harp on my point for a bit longer, because I don't know whether you've spotted, but what used to be called the Arrow Launcher, which was Microsoft's garage project, an app launcher and kind of a today screen, if you like, for Android. I mean, that's been renamed, I think, the Microsoft Launcher now. So we have got, if Microsoft were to partner with someone like Samsung, I mean, the Note 8 with its stylus centric stuff, so with all the part would work well with, you know, Windows Ink style applications. It's got the DeX to act to the Continuum stuff. If you had the Microsoft launcher and if you had Cortana baked in as the main assistant, plus the Microsoft apps up foremost above any other Android system apps. You could actually, it wouldn't just be having, you know, I suppose a geek these days could probably hack most of it together, but to have it all come for a user from the factory, sold by Microsoft in Microsoft physical and online stores early next year, that's still something that I think many people in our community would actually go for. If they're full all in on Microsoft, this will be a way forward when their Lumia 950s and Idol 4 Pros start to die and they can't buy replacements. So where do you go? Well, people are saying go Android, but you can actually go Android in theory, but with all the Microsoft stuff as well, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, actually, you could set up that yourself. I mean, rather a lot of work, so there is something quite compelling. And we've talked in the past, is it possible to kind of have a smartphone that's a bit more pre-configured? And sort of Android certainly lends itself to that to a certain extent. Would it be someone like Samsung or would it be a smaller manufacturer? You know, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll talk about that a future time. But yes, that kind of principle, I agree that actually marrying kind of really great hardware to a software bundle, particularly if some of the software was specialized, and then kind of the Note 8 is kind of a good one to think about because of the stylus and, as you say, that link in with ink and with DeX and all those other things. I suspect Microsoft and Samsung, actually, it's a partnership that kind of makes some sort of sense. So, yeah, it'd be great to get other people's thoughts and comments on this. You can leave them on the site or email Steve or I directly.
And I will take as a homework action, Rafe, to purloin an S7 Edge or S8 Plus from somewhere and stock it full of Microsoft stuff and have a play and report back, because it would be nice to have a vision of what might work there. But all the while, I should be still enjoying my Lumia, and I'm hoping to get the Idol 4 Pro back in just to fill people in. I haven't got it at the moment because one of the speakers and failed, and given that the only real USP of the Idol 4 Pro was the fabulous speakers, to have one of those fail on me was a bit disappointing. But anyway, I'm hoping to get one back in shortly, and then there may well be more Idol 4 Pro content. But we're running long, Rafe. I think we should draw a halt to it there. There's plenty to talk chat about in subsequent weeks, and I know it's late in the evening where we both are. But so I'll say goodbye, and I'll let Rafe do the final sign-off as usual.
Yeah, it's a goodbye from me as well. Always interested to hear your feedback, thoughts and questions. But other than that, thank you for listening and please tune in next time.